All right. Crime and Justice Radio has been a mainstay from its debut going back to April. And I'll tell you what a show it has been from 6 to 7 on a Monday night, Crime and Justice Radio. And that's where Bruce Barquette and Ida Lysenring take the reins. They do it every day as far as the law firm, Barquette Epstein, Karen Aldea Laterco. And it is always great to have him on. Bruce and Ian, how are you both on this MLK Day? Thanks for coming aboard.
Happy Martin Luther King Day. It's an honor to be here with you, Jay. How you doing?
I'm okay.
Good morning.
I'm doing great.
Good morning.
Bruce, you okay?
Other than the Cowboys are tortured me again this year, I'm doing well.
You know, they laid a proverbial egg yesterday.
Oh,
yeah. They laid an egg yesterday.
I don't want it, but it was terrible.
How do you not know a referee has to touch the ball? That's part of the time clock. And you're dwindling down on a quarterback sneak with no time left on the clock? How do you do that if you're Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy? How do you possibly do that? You have the ball. Bruce, please.
At the 40-yard line, you had 14 seconds. You had at least two shots into the end zone from there. Look, there has been one constant in Dallas for the last 27 years. We've had multiple head coaches, multiple quarterbacks, multiple coordinators. One constant, Jerry Jones. He is awful. He needs to relinquish any control over football practices there or football operations. He fired Jimmy Johnson, and the team has literally never been the same. Unbelievable. But we digress away from
Jay. Bruce has been a practicing criminal defense lawyer for how long, Bruce? 30 years?
30 plus, right. More, right.
30 plus. We won't age you, but you're a very experienced criminal defense lawyer. And I received a text last night from Bruce stating, "I'm going to announce my retirement from active legal representation. The Dallas Cowboys desperately need a head coach much more than any of our clients need me."
Unbelievable.
You could do some good then. You know, if they gave us one more camera shot of Jerry and his family in the press box, I was ready to throw up. You know, I mean, come on. I've had enough. Listen, I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I can relate to you. Believe me. I got my own problems with the Giants here. Believe me. Trust me. I'm the only saving grace is I don't have to see John Maron, Steve Tisch, every 5 seconds on a shot in the press box. I mean, geez, I've had enough. Aida, I wanted to ask you regarding the Maxwell stuff. I know the books are closed and whatnot, but we keep hearing, she's never going to talk, and name names and whatnot. You know, do you think that will hold true right down to the bitter end of her as far as sentencing and everything else? Now, listen, I know you're going to have some appeals in play and everything else here, but do you feel that she will completely stay quiet here as far as, you know, even if it means a lesser sentence of some kind?
Well, she still has an opportunity before sentencing to come forward, admit her guilt, cooperate with the government, and in doing so, she can receive a 5K letter, what's known as a 5K letter, stating from the government that she's been very cooperative and helped in the government's investigation of other related matters. Now, the question is, will she do that? If she does that, she stands to lessen the great length of her imminent sentence. She is facing basically the rest of her life in prison. She would die in prison, assuming she is sentenced the way most federal judges would sentence an individual in this matter and given her age. But now she has this very meritorious, appealable issue, the juror issue. And if she cooperates and admits her guilt, she may lose that appeal. And if she loses that appeal, she doesn't get a second bite at the apple. And now that she's been through the trial and the lawyers have been through the trial, they know what the playbook is. They know what the witnesses are going to say. They know who the witnesses are. So it's a tough call to make. I don't think she's going to make it.
Bruce, what do you think as far as Maxwell is concerned with this whole?
I think that it's fantasy to think that she has information about other higher ranking or more prominent individuals and sexual misconduct. If she had that information, she would have traded it in a heartbeat to avoid the trial. And to the extent that she knows of somebody's misconduct, the government is not interested in it. Otherwise, the deal would have been done. So
I think it's the latter. I think she's got information. She can't not have information.
Why not? I mean, it is. This is the conspiracy theory from the right that this somehow she's going to out Bill Clinton, or the conspiracy theory from the left that Bill Gates was there or Donald Trump. I just roll my eyes the back of my head when I hear this. Whatever misconduct she engaged in, she was convicted. The juror issue is interesting. She doesn't have any information that's going to be worthy of being traded or it would have happened already. So maybe Ais is correct. Maybe she has the information that the government prosecuted her to silence her. But if that was the case, then she would out the information publicly. She would talk about what she has and how the government is trying to protect Bill Clinton. And that's the whole purpose of the prosecution.
Not without a price.
She would offer it. It just is. I love these cases for the merits of them. Right? I mean, it's an interesting case in many respects, but I don't love the conspiracy stuff that comes with it. And that's what I think the idea that she has information is. That's my view.
And it sounds like Aida Andrews is going to get his, the prince, the fine feather prince. You know, it sounds like, they're going to steamroll him as far as everything from a legal sense right now. You get that feeling too? Andrew is not in a safe haven anymore here, especially being stripped and everything else as he has over the last week by his lovely mother, the queen. It doesn't bode well for the prince.
And being stripped of all those titles has the legal impact of him not being afforded the protection of the royal court. And so he's going to be tried as a civilian, which actually, speaking of, you know, international men of interest, it leads into our incredible guest tonight, who we may have forgotten for a little bit, but he's been on the headlines for the last 10 plus years. We have Julian Assange's lawyer, Barry Pollack, who Bruce and him have worked on many successful projects together. So we're very excited to talk about extradition issues and international procedural legal matters.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it is an interesting matter. In preparing for tonight's show, I didn't realize this. The ACLU, along with a dozen other American reporters, associations, and press associations, have called for the end of the prosecution of Mr. Assange. He's been 1,000 days in a British jail. Initially, his extradition was denied. The request to extradite him to the United States was denied. One of the reasons the judge denied that, or the magistrate in England, was because he'd be subjected to unduly harsh prison conditions pre-trial in the United States at places like MCC, where we have had clients where obviously Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. And that ruling was reversed by an intermediate appellate court, and they're still appealing it to a even higher court in England to see if they can't stop the extradition altogether. Talking about conspiracy theories or whatnot, the WikiLeaks releases and information really was stunning in many ways. So he really is a fascinating character, and the legal labyrinth that he's been through over the last 10 years plus is fascinating. So we'll get a chance to speak with his American lawyer and see where things stand and where they're going to go.
You know, it's interesting because the U.S. is making their case on this in reading about it. and really arguing that Assange, Aida had, what, no history of any illness mentally, right? No serious and enduring mental illness. So, you know, they're trying to make their case, but in the fact that, you know, he could serve any type of sentence he would be given in his native land, which is, what, Australia, right? So if they agreed to, you know, to extradite him. So they're trying to throw everything out there as far as making their case, right?
Absolutely. And even though he's had no history of mental illness throughout his life, and he's beyond sophisticated and intelligent, arguably, according to some, genius. His mental condition has declined over the course of the last 10 years being, in the Ecuadorian embassy for the length of time. And not that he wasn't permitted out. He couldn't leave, or he would have been arrested and extradited to Sweden on rape allegations that ultimately Sweden dropped. And then Ecuador said, you know, the guest has stayed too long. And now he's incarcerated. And Bruce raises an interesting point about the arguments that all these civil liberties unions are supporting on Julian Assange's behalf, of the jail conditions being so inhumane in America that it would be cruel to extradite him, and ultimately unconstitutional. And that brings me to Martin Luther King Day. We've come such an incredibly long way in America, and for the course of the last 4 or 5 years, the public has been subjected to nonstop talks about racism. And if you look anywhere in America to find evidence that it still exists, it's in the prison system. People of color are disproportionately represented in prison. Often the race of the victim determines conviction, the plea deal, and the length of incarceration. And recently, it's become a topic of bipartisan support. And we saw that, you know, very clearly with the national campaign against the execution of Julius Jones in Oklahoma, where both the right and the left, hand in hand, came together to support his commutation. So it all kind of comes back to America and the prison system. And I really hope that over the course of the next few years, if we make any strides, it's there.
Well, yeah. People use Martin Luther King, I think, for many things. He's almost become like an American gospel, where individuals from all walks of life, from every side of the political spectrum, will quote him for different reasons and assert that Martin Luther King would be on their side on whatever particular issue. One of the fascinating things about him is he was a visionary. He was way ahead of his time in terms of race relations and in terms of fairness. And in 1957, in an article in Ebony, Dr. King was asked what he thought of the punishment of the death penalty, of executing individuals. And he said, "I do not think God approves of the death penalty for any crime. Capital punishment is against the better judgment of modern criminology and, above all, against the highest expression of love in the nature of God." So as a nod to Martin Luther King today, talk about the end of the death penalty. And Aida mentioned Julius Jones, who was a few hours away from being executed. And stopped literally by individuals of all races and all across the political spectrum to call for the commutation of his sentence, which the governor eventually did, albeit a few hours before he was supposed to be executed.
It's amazing, it really is. You know, I had Elaine Gross on earlier, and, you know, even today, and he would have been 93, and I'm sure he would have you know, loved so many different aspects, especially with government, Supreme Court, Barack Obama. Who would have thunk it, right? Two-term president, Barack Obama. But in essence, you know, the message, the overall message from King still is about, you know, one's aspirations. He had always had high hopes. And I think with all the in-betwixt, in-between that has occurred, and there are some many divisions still that exist, I still think the overall King message would have been right there as far as having high hopes for one to aspire to. And I think that's one of the reasons why we look so highly upon an individual who lost his life at the age of 39. He would have been 93 today in that span. I think that still would have held true, that message.
Absolutely. Yeah. Highest aspirations and being able to reach those without being hindered by the color of your skin. And that's what we all hope for, that individuals can strive and reach their goals or fall short, if that's the case, dependent upon their own merit, without race or ethnicity playing a role.
No question. Well, we look forward to tonight. That should be a good one. The Assange Lawyer. Crime and Justice Radio at 6 o'clock, ladies and gentlemen, right here on LI News Radio. Bruce and Aida from the great firm of Barkhead Epstein. Thanks so much. Thanks so much. We'll be listening tonight, gang.
Thank you for having us. Have a good Monday, Jay.
Appreciate
Always a pleasure.
Everybody enjoy the time off. We'll see you tonight.